Charcot-neuroarthropathy, commonly referred to as Charcot foot, is a non-infective destructive process activated by a combination of mechanical, vascular, and physiological factors. Although Charcot foot can occur without the diagnosis of diabetes mellitus, the majority of the orthotically treated patients with Charcot foot do have diabetes and are prone to the development of foot ulcers. Once a wound develops, the primary goal becomes offloading the foot to preserve foot function, heal the wound, stop further progression of deformity, and correct abnormal gait patterns. Reducing tissue motion, accommodating osseous prominences, providing shock absorption, and reducing the amount of time the foot is on the ground are also important goals in providing successful offloading to promote ulcer healing. Two commonly prescribed orthotic interventions for offloading neuropathic feet in this population are the Charcot Restraint Orthotic Walker, or CRO, and the custom fabricated AFO with a calf lacer, or lacer AFO. Surprisingly, the existing evidence base to support the use of orthoses in the prevention and treatment of diabetic foot ulcers secondary to Charcot arthropathy is extremely limited. Hi everyone, I'd like to welcome you to episode 27 of O&P Research Insights, presented by the American Academy of Orthotists and Prosthetists. I'm Dr. Steve Gard, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal of Prosthetics and Orthotics. My guest today is Ms. Clayton Benson, MPO, CO, LPO. Ms. Benson is from Fort Worth, Texas. She graduated from the University of Texas at Austin in 2019 with a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. In 2021, she earned her Master's of Prosthetics and Orthotics from UT Southwestern Medical Center. Ms. Benson completed both her orthotic and prosthetic residencies at Baker Orthotics and Prosthetics in Fort Worth, Texas, where she now works as an orthotist and board-eligible prosthetist. Today, we will be discussing a recent article that Ms. Benson published in JPO entitled, A Retrospective Comparison of Orthotic Interventions on Charcot Feet. Welcome to the podcast, Clayton.
Thank you. I'm excited to talk a little bit more about the research project.
That's wonderful because we're excited to have you on this podcast. And I'd like to start out by asking, why does this topic interest you?
So I began this research project during my time at UT Southwestern in 2021. Each cohort takes on a research project and you can work on it individually or in a group. And in my case, this was individually, and I worked with a faculty mentor, Tiffany Graham. So it was her project initial idea, and then I signed on to the project. I was initially drawn to this project because a lot of the other projects were focused on pediatrics. I'm really passionate about working with the adult population, and CRO boots and calf lacer AFOs working with Charcot is a big part of that. So this kind of also provided me with a unique opportunity to make it my own and possibly get it published, which I'm really glad that it did. So also during the middle stages of this project, we started with a data collection, a literature review, and then halfway through that point where we're writing the actual paper and seeing the results of the project, I got to do my clinical rotation while I was still in school at Baker Prosthetics and Orthotics, where I work now. So that was really cool because I actually got to see Charcot diagnosis in the real life clinic, and that kind of brought it all together for me with the research project. And to describe my first time seeing a Charcot diagnosis a little bit, so we had a patient where it was just classic diagnosis. Comes in, huge swelled up foot, it was hot to the touch, classic rocker bottom deformity was already starting with the breakdown of those bones, and the patient was doing everything right. He was not weight-bearing, he was on a knee scooter, following every doctor's order. So it is interesting to see how frustrating it is for these patients when they feel like they're doing everything right with their healthcare and to still get these wounds and these complications despite the different orthotic treatments.
That's great that you had that personal insight as you're getting involved in this particular project.
Yeah.
So what was the motivation for this particular study?
Yeah, so you can break it down into three categories. So the first is that there's a lack of standardization of terminology, prescriptions, and fabrication for offloading devices like CRO and the calf lacer AFO. The second one is adherence to prescription of total contact casts, otherwise known as the gold standard for healing wounds with these kind of diagnoses, it doesn't appear to be a reality in a lot of clinical practice. And that's definitely something that I've seen now having completed both of my residencies. I feel like we don't see a lot of total contact casts being used to heal wounds. And so that kind of leaves us with these other options that doctors are prescribing, like the crow boot and more rarely the calf lace or AFO. And then the third point is when I did the literature review for this project, I found that there's not a lot of studies about this. So we need more studies to confirm the promising effects of these other offloading interventions so that more doctors can have more information to make the right choices for their patients.
I agree. There's a lot of gaps in foundational knowledge in O&P, and it's good that you are trying to fill that void through this investigation.
For sure.
What was the purpose of your study?
So the purpose of this study was to determine if there is a difference in post-surgical recurrent ulceration rate and progression of Charcot deformity between two orthotic interventions, the crow and the custom calf lacer AFO with double uprights.
So did you have hypotheses or expectations going into this study?
Yeah, so this was interesting. Since I started out with the literature review, going through tons and tons of papers, gathering information on what was out there about these orthotic interventions and also the total contact cast, it could get a little bit overwhelming with kind of the pessimism or negativity around the entire thing. So you read a lot of papers and it's about non-compliant patients. What does that mean? Why are these wounds not healing? Why can't we come up with anything better? Why is there not more research about this? All of these questions circulating around. When we are thinking about our hypothesis, we're obviously hoping to find an alternative treatment other than the total contact cast or just non-weight bearing for long periods of time. For most people, that's unrealistic to be non-weight bearing and heal these wounds or heal your Charcot for months and months. It's just not doable for most people. You don't want to sit in bed. You don't want to sit on your couch every single day. So we're hoping to find that the crow and or the calf lacer AFO would improve some of these outcomes.
Did you have an expectation for which of the orthoses might perform better? Or was that kind of an objective that you were hoping to determine?
So we were just hoping initially to see that there was a difference between them in the complication rates after treatment. So for the crow, that's after the total contact cast, that's like the go-to that most doctors prescribe. So we were hoping to see that was successful in treating this diagnosis and the wounds that come with it. And then, of course, if we could have the calf lacer AFO that is a little bit nicer to look at, you could say. It's not a big black boot that looks like a ski boot. A patient could use their own shoe. It might hide a little better under pants. We were hoping that something like that would have greater success.
Thank you for that clarification. Let's talk about the study design a little bit. So what were the inclusion-exclusion criteria for the study participants?
Yeah, so subjects had to be diagnosed with diabetes mellitus type 1 or type 2 and Charcot neuropathy by provider. And then they had to be referred to UT Southwestern's prosthetic and orthotic clinic for orthotic treatment. The treatment had to occur between September 1st, 2018 and May 1st, 2020. So a short period there. Subjects had to be treated with a crow or a calf lacer AFO. We didn't look at any other orthotic interventions. And then they were excluded if they received a midfoot or higher amputation prior to getting the offloading device. So no like partial feet within a crow.
So how did you go about collecting data?
Yeah, the data collection was the most time-intensive part, I'll say, of this project. I think it's easy to forget when we read some of these research papers that behind the results is someone who spent hours and hours sifting through data and then organizing it in a way that can be interpreted. So that was me. I was that person on this project. So to identify the subjects, a billing audit of patients between the start and end dates of the treatment period was run using the HCPCS codes L2330 and L4361. And for those who don't know, the L2330 is the LEASER code, and then L4361 is the CRO code. So we ran those billing audits, and it gave us a list of patients. And then we narrowed down the complications that we were looking for, which were four main ones: death, amputation, surgery, and ulceration. So once we got our list and what we were looking for, I went through chart by chart through these patients and went through my spreadsheet and made notes where we could to gather all the data.
And then how did you go about analyzing those data?
I was fortunate to have the expertise of Dr. Wang at UT Southwestern, who provided the statistical analysis for this study. So she took the data that I gathered from the patient charts, and then she performed the necessary tests to compare the number of complications between the groups defined by the demographic variables that we had set. So we had several meetings with her where she would go over the preliminary results and we would make tweaks here and there based on what she was finding. So I was really lucky to have her expertise with the statistics for sure.
Yeah, statistics are always fun. So it's nice to have an expert involved in your study.
Yes.
So how many participants did you end up including in your study?
Yeah, when we ran the billing audit, we ended up finding 87 subjects that were under those two codes. And then after going through all of those charts, 47 of them met the inclusion criteria. So 38 were CRO patients that met the inclusion criteria, and 9 were LEASER AFO patients.
And what were the demographics of your participants?
Patients in the LEASER group were older than the CRO group. The median age of the LEASER group was 61, and then the median age of the CRO group was 55. 2/3 of the subjects in both groups were males, so we had a little bit more males than females. The majority of the patients in the LEASER group were white, and then the majority of the patients in the CRO group were Hispanic. And it was about an even split for the rest of the race categories. 48% of the CRO users wore their orthosis for 2 years, whereas 64% of LEASER AFO users wore their orthosis for 2 to 3 years. We saw that the LEASER AFO, they wore them for a little bit longer period. And then I'll also mention that there was no significant difference between any of the different demographic groups. So whether it was age group, sex, race, or affected side, left versus right, there wasn't a significant difference between any of those.
And what were some of the primary findings of your investigation?
So we found that 1/3 of LEASER AFO subjects had surgery before orthotic intervention. And for CROs, it was 18.4%. And then this is the big one here. There was no significant difference in complication rate between the two groups after orthotic intervention. And then lastly, a total of 44.4% of LEASER AFO patients had one or more complications, and 42.1% of CRO patients had one or more complications. So those were the main things that we found.
That's great. Now, something I always like to ask to get investigator insight, were there any unanticipated surprises in your findings? And if so, can you explain them?
Yeah, so the first one is that we found that most complications occurred within the first year of orthotic intervention. If you think about this from a clinical perspective, it makes sense, since most doctors, they're trying to heal these wounds. They want to use something that's going to work. And so they're prescribing the gold standard, usually, of the CRO, and then some of them also opted for the cath LEASER AFO. So offloading at the acute stage of Charcot neuropathy is the most important management strategy in preventing further complications. For both orthotic interventions, they were most likely being prescribed during the acute phase of what was going on, so it makes sense that they would continue to have some of these complications pop up during that acute phase when they're trying to get everything under control.
So did you encounter any notable problems in the course of your study? And if so, what would you have done differently?
The biggest problem we faced was the small sample size. So when we only had the 9 cath LEASER AFO patients, that was a little bit of a bummer because that's not that many to compare to the 43. So it limited the power of the study to detect significant differences between the groups. We found that the Leaser AFO was prescribed less frequently than the Crow, most likely because there is little research and information out there for physicians for different offloading methods. So some physicians might not even know about the calf Leaser, or if they saw a picture of it, it could look archaic with the Leaser design and the double uprights. So that could also be something that contributed to why we had so few of the Leaser patients.
So what are the main clinical takeaways of your study?
The main clinical takeaways were that the adherence to prescription of total contact casts does not appear to be reality in clinical practice. Current orthotic interventions have similar complication rates. That's the main thing that we found from this study. We need more studies out there about orthotic interventions and either their failures or their successes for healing Charcot, healing wounds. And then another thing is that we need to focus on patient compliance and what it means. How can we help our patients be successful wearing these devices? Are they wearing it correctly? Are they tucking their thick jeans inside of the Crow boot, and maybe that's what's causing them to continue to get wounds? And then also keeping in mind that it's unrealistic to ask most people to stay off of their feet 24/7 when they're trying to heal their wounds. I think that's a big thing that is easy to forget and gets lost in translation when you're like looking at all of this data about wounds and about Charcot, and you're like, why don't they just stay off of it? And then you think about if that was you sitting at home off your feet all day.
Yeah, I'm sure that's challenging, but those are good clinical takeaways, good things to keep in mind. Now, we may have some listeners who are actually interested in building on this study or doing something similar here. So do you have any recommendations for future research directions based on your work?
So number one thing I would say is find a way to increase the sample size. So whether that's reaching out to other clinics for their data points, or also increasing the treatment window, maybe doing a study instead of over about 2 years, doing 10 years, looking back and seeing the results there. And then I also thought it would be interesting to do a study where you looked at the size of wounds you were trying to heal. So if there was a way to have where you were going in maybe weekly or monthly, measuring the size of the wound and seeing if there was a decrease between the calf Leaser AFO and the Crow and the size of the wound over time.
Very nice. And I like to conclude every interview by asking, is there any funding you'd like to acknowledge that you received to conduct this work?
This study was supported by the Prosthetic and Orthotic Department at UT Southwestern, as well as the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. So the last thing that I'll say is I just want to say thank you to all the authors of this paper, especially Tiffany Graham. She's a faculty member at UT Southwestern and generally such an amazing person. She encouraged and inspired me to take on this project and helped me see it through to publication, even after I graduated and had entered my residency. Thank you, Tiffany.
Excellent work, Clayton. And thank you for the interview. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've come to the end of our podcast, so I'd like to thank Ms. Benson for sharing her insights and discussing her research with us today. I'd like to remind everyone that if you would like additional information on this project, you can access the full article about this study in the Journal of Prosthetics and Orthotics. Thank you again for joining us for this episode of O&P Research Insights, presented by the American Academy of Orthotists and Prosthetists. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Please plan to join us again next month for the Academy's O&P Research Insights podcast, when we'll be hosting another author and discussing their recent JPO article. And don't forget to check out the Academy's other podcasts for O&P professionals, O&P Clinical Insiders, a podcast created for conversations on specific areas of clinical care, and the award-winning O&P Rising, a podcast created for emerging professionals in our industry.